Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Haynes, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services in Southern California.
Welcome. This is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And I'm Nolan Haynes from Nolan Haynes Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
Well, what is happening with everyone now that we're into the freezing winter months, which I kind of joke about because here in Southern California, it's actually cold, but because of rain, it's green. It's greener here than it's green any time of the year.
20
so it's really
below
nice.
Wind chill here.
Yeah.
And I'm not exaggerating.
Should really?
Yeah.
Should be
I'm
legal
so
to live there.
Serious. It's awesome. There's certain times of the year. Hey, I'll just start with us. We're busy. It's really, really, it's corporate meeting season and it's all warm weather locations. So Sandy, we're not visiting your part of the world or yours, Nolan. I've been in Florida. This will be my third trip to Florida, already. Last week we were, was it just last week? This is really funny. I was in Huntington Beach doing a project for a company. Again, it's an upper Northeast company and they want to get away from the snow. So they chose Southern California right on the beach, which is not summertime warm, but it's better than 4 feet of snow or whatever they have, 20 below weather like Sandy's talking about. But what's really funny about it is, so two of us, our graphics team are on site at this event. And Lori's heading up another graphics team, literally two hotels over in Huntington Beach, running a meeting for a completely separate company, different AV, different end client. So it was kind of fun. We got to see each other a couple of times throughout the week. And, but you know, because everybody flocks to the nice weather locations.
They're like special forces with multiple units.
You are.
It's kind of novel. Actually, even more funny is a couple of weeks before that, two of us, I and Christy, were in Orlando doing what was a great show. We'll have some photos of that on the Facebook account eventually. But Lori was there with a freelance, another graphics person they brought in who we like a lot. So we were actually both in Orlando at the same time, but we only got to see each other for dinner once during the whole week because we were both on kind of different ends of Orlando. But yeah, so it's been a very funny start to the year, just overlapping. What's going on with you?
I'm finally putting to bed these two huge template projects from last year. One naturally and one forcibly, but they're done, I think.
Cool.
So Sandy, with 20 below wind chill, I'm assuming you're indoors doing work and baking and stuff. You're not running around outside.
I am not. As a matter of fact, you know, I think last time I told you have this garage heater in my office. It's so cold. I have to turn it off for these recordings. So we don't have the background noise. It's imagine it looking more industrial than, say, an in-home space heater. But I'm so darn cold. My home isn't that cold. I think it's all in my head.
What are you doing in Project World, Sandy?
So good thing I have to stay indoors because I've got, in addition to some regular project work, I am working on a conference for May 1 through 4, I think it is. And anyway, that includes 5 keynotes and 30 breakout sessions.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's
which
a lot.
Which you're doing all yourself.
Yeah, right. No, I have a nice, I don't have the internal staff that Troy has, but I do have a great cadre of subcontractors all around the country that help me out in times like this.
Cool. We will, maybe we'll talk about contractors another episode, but I've got some new ones that I've been working with or testing out. And it's hard.
Hey,
that's
I know.
That's a great topic.
It is because all of a sudden my ears perk up. Oh, you mean you're interviewing people? Are they good? I want to know. You know, and then you're going, no, I need them.
write that down, Troy. We'll talk about working with other designers, subcontractors.
That's a great topic. Yeah, I think we've all done that. I think everybody listening does that or is a part of that. So, news. Is there any news happening right now in the PowerPoint? I mean, I got one little tidbit. I don't know if there's really a whole lot out there.
It's been quiet. What's yours? What do you have?
Oh, mine's a Microsoft thing, and it applies to a very small group, but we're a part of it, so it does directly apply. I don't know if you got the email, and you had to read way down in this very corporate email. Microsoft announced their MVP summit dates for 2018.
Oh, yes.
Which is the first time we've ever gotten advance notice, but it's a huge deal. Oh, I think it's great. So here's the deal. For the past I don't know, how long have I been in an MVP? 10, 11 years? I think I missed the very, no, I had to go the very, anyways, it's always been at the, in the fall, around November, the busiest time of the year for us. Now, I'm just got done saying how busy we are now, but the fall is even busier. And that's because there's other conferences that I personally want to attend. The presentation summit happens that time of year.
You're right.
This past year, we just had to skip, even though we were going to go to Adobe Max. It was in San Diego. I mean, it was like drivable. Like, hey, there it is. We had to skip it. There was just too many things going on. So the fall's, so now, starting in 2018, they've moved the MVP summit to March, the first week of March. I think it's great, but Sandy,
no,
you don't?
I don't, just because of this conference I'm working on right now. It's just really bad timing. We work with, part of the process for getting ready for this conference, those breakout sessions I mentioned, we work with executives from all over the globe starting in March. And we help them through their presentations. We work with them to coach them all remotely. And it's just a big, big project.
So you're not sure if you'll be able to make it or not.
It's 2018.
Are you kidding? I would never miss the MVP summit. I would have to figure out how to rely on my subcontractors.
Oh, good. Excellent. I have nothing on the calendar for 2018.
Okay, so here's our topic. Let's go with a scenario. Your client from, say, 1, 2, maybe even 8 years ago calls and asks for a few revisions to that incredible presentation that you developed, you know, 1, 2, or 8 years ago. And do you have not only the presentation, but the layered Photoshop file because they deleted their versions of everything a while ago and now they need to make changes for this new thing. They'd like to ask you to do it, but they don't really want to pay for all the work again. Just, you know, a little bit of, you know, it's just only a quick thing. So today, we, as a group, get to talk about how our studio processes for archiving project files, what we let clients know that we do with their files, and some of the file structure, organization, best practices that we've each put in place for our businesses. Okay, so real quick roll call. Do you keep old project files?
Absolutely.
I sure do, and mine go back to 2001.
Wow. And we do as well. So as a follow-up to that, do you give the client all of the working files and assets of a project or something like just the final deliverables or something else?
I usually just deliver the final deliverable, which is PowerPoint. I don't provide any other assets except for video if I've done video editing work. And the reason is most of my clients can't use any of the other files. They don't have Adobe Illustrator. They don't use Photoshop, that type of thing. So I just keep it simple.
I think we're very much in alignment. We deliver the final deliverable. I mean, that's our contract. You're going to receive the final deliverable. And a big part of that is things like concepts and comps are delivered in PDF format to get feedback on. Like we're wrapping up the branding for a large meeting coming up. So we're working within their corporate style guide to come up with the overall branding. They gave us the tagline for the event, and we've created, you know, a dozen different iterations of ways to utilize this tagline into a big, almost a theme graphic, but it goes a little bit further because it's going to be used for PowerPoint templates. It's going to be used for digital signage. It's going to be used for things like name badges. It'll be used on their web page. It'll be used for web banners, HTML. So, you know, we're thinking it has to be designed in a way that can be used in just a lot of different contexts. But the final deliverable is what they're going to receive. If they ask for one of the comps, the reason we write this is because they're mock-ups. I mean, they are, they're not real files.
Rough.
Yeah, we're kind of faking it a lot of times, and they're not something you'd want to hand over because they're not really, really usable at that stage. So they're not a part of it.
You don't want to see how law sausages or comps are made, right?
So. You know, all the layered art and like video project files and everything outside of the final deliverables, they're part of our project archives. We do keep them, but we generally, they're not a part of our standard deliverables contract. Partially for what you said, Sandy, people just can't utilize them. And second of all, they may have other, we just want to make sure everything delivered is final and polished. And I don't want to take the time in a Photoshop file to make sure everything is, nice and neat and tidy.
Right.
Now, for presentation, I usually just deliver the final PowerPoint files. But I do a lot of InDesign work as well. And in that case, I do on request, not always, but on request will provide packaged InDesign files, which would be needed for them to make, you know, real edits down the road, or sometimes printers actually want the InDesign file as opposed to a print-ready PDF. And this is actually a bit of a controversy in the graphic design worlds of whether, and it really depends on the type of software and the type of project you're doing, but some designers say clients are not entitled to source files unless they pay for them. Others don't care. I'm more on the I don't care sort of format. I mean, it's I actually do think, you know, when somebody says, you know, if you create icons for us or a logo or whatever, you know, they'll ask me straight out. They'll say, do we own that? I'm like, yes, you own that. That is what you're paying me to do. Now, that said, the way we create certain things may mean that if we're only doing it for a certain format, for example, this just happened this past week, we designed one of these big template projects about 100 icons, custom icons for the template for presentations. So we put them together partly in Illustrator, partly in PowerPoint. We sort of, you know, in the end, they all worked in PowerPoint, but they were being done for presentation. And then they called up and said, oh, we love these so much. Can we have the Illustrator files so we can use them in print and online? And I said, well, A, we didn't create them in such a way for you to do that. It would require more time for us to convert them. But B, our agreement is that this is only for a presentation. I'm not designing icons for you to use in your whole business across, you know, on the web and marketing and print. If you want that, that's a discussion. And that's a separate thing.
That's a complete upfront discussion that seems to not always happen the way it should. Is that a way to say that?
Right. And it's fine if you decide later, but clients, if you like, don't ever hold something back from a designer thinking, oh, well, you know, we'll just pay him for this and then we'll use it later in something else. Not good, not just from a legal standpoint, but also from a formatting and the way things are set up to begin with.
We get that all the time. What about you? I mean, just going to say, we get that all the time in the fact that, like, we'll design this great diagram or let's go with a photo. We'll customize a photo and it'll be dropped in. It'll look perfect, you know, very stylized. And they'll say, oh, we want to use this in our print material. I'm like, oh, you know, that was a ping image at 72 DPI.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's not really going to work for print.
But the point is, and I think you both should feel complimented by it. You've probably inspired them to expand whatever photo, whatever icons it is that you've created. Yeah. I mean, obviously we can't all be creating to more than the project we're assigned to, because that would expand our prices, our workload, everything. But there is that consideration that you've probably made them be really excited about what you've done. So take it as a compliment. But I'd like to know, so let's say, Troy, as you started this, a client comes to you in 1, 2, or 8 years and wants these old projects. How do you guys and where do you keep project archive files?
I'm picturing Troy's sort of the last scene of Indiana Jones in the warehouse. Where he's
I know which way you're talking about.
Absolutely. You know. Yeah.
It's a very tiny room. we do have a lot of large corporate clients, and we sign a lot of very detailed, very scary legal documents about, you know, non-disclosures, you know, content has to stay, you know, content doesn't mix with other brands, things like that. So I think we, TLC Creative Services, has put together some pretty robust archive and security workflow that I don't expect a lot of independent designers or small shops to have in place. So in summary, we have a central server for all active projects, and it's a pretty robust server. And all the designers' work on a project is on that server, as well as on their local machine. And they do daily syncs with their in-process files, actually a couple of times a day. Even if we're working remote, we have a VPN tunnel that goes into it securely, only from that particular machine, so that the files are always available to us in the studio. And this actually just happened recently. Actually, it just happened this morning. And the only reason I know about it is I read the email chain. We delivered a project. It went over great. And the client, we sent it through this one was a Hightail link because their corporate structure doesn't allow Dropbox or Box or a couple others. And it was too large for email. So we gave them a Hightail link. They reviewed it. It was great. They were off site and needed to access a slide because again, they're going to repurpose part of it. We get a panic email. Hey, the link doesn't work. It was only a 14-day link. And now we're, a month into it or more, can you guys resend it? Well, sure. Our project manager just went into the project archives because it's already archived. It's done and gone. Went in there, pulled the final project, gave them a new download link, said, here you go, all in about 10 minutes. I mean, they're ecstatic. They're like, that's phenomenal. So again, the archiving worked. So we have this way of, so we have active projects, we have archive projects, we have assets, we have other things. When a project is complete, all the files are synced to the server. They're kind of cleaned up. A lot of things we don't need are, jettisoned, so we don't keep them on our things. They're organized and the project is marked as ready to invoice on our project management system. And then when the project is actually invoiced, all the projects move from the active projects folder into our archive server. So we keep everything available. We have virtually every project going back to the mid-90s.
Wow.
Sandy said 2009. I was actually trying to think about that. I originally was going to say the late 90s. I'm thinking 99 when we started doing – that's when we started doing presentation design work. But we have stuff actually going all the way back to at least 92, I would say. To finish that off, in addition, we have a very large set of external drives. I mean, they're like 4 and 8 terabytes each. That we do external backups of all the backups. So, I mean, everything is kind of backed up multiple times. Mm-hmm. Active projects, archive projects are backed up. We have full computer restores, which we've had to use a few times. So if a computer dies, or what I've always been more worried about is a computer gets stolen. Computers are completely locked down, password security, files are all encrypted, everything along the lines. But, what does our design team do when their computer's lost? Well, we can actually rebuild. We have bare metal restores. We can put a computer back online from its last restore point, last backup point, in about 45 minutes. They can, here's a new computer, keep going. I would also add cloud-based archives. I didn't mention that, but the volume of our files is now over 20 terabytes and it's just too costly to do something cloud-based. I think it would be really time-consuming as well to keep it constantly looking, even on the fast fiber optic network we get to, internet connection. I'm pretty confident we have all of our active projects in at least 4 places, which means that nothing is ever going to be permanently lost. And the archives we have in 3 places, on the server, external here in the office, and we have an external offsite in a safe. So I guess like I said, it's really robust, and paranoia reigns for me in that realm.
That's good. I'm not quite, I don't know if I have 4, locations for mine. I don't know if I'm quite there, but all my current projects are kept in Dropbox folders. So just by that, they're backed up in a number of different places. And then when a project's billed, it goes into the build folder. When I get payment, it goes gets archived onto my hard drive, along with all the archived emails from the project, which then in turn is backed up to multiple external drives via Time Machine. So I've got a couple of external hard drives, a time capsule, and also one that goes into a fireproof safe, not offsite, but in the house. Maybe it should be offsite, but every couple weeks I update that emergency safe copy as well. So things are in a few different places, but haven't had any issues yet.
I think I'm closer to Nolan than I am Troy in my structure. I keep all my projects by current year and previous year in my OneDrive that syncs on my desktop. So I'm in the cloud and I'm also on OneDrive. So that allows me, my business partners, subcontractors, to access it wherever we are. But because we have multiple people, this is something you didn't mention, Troy, maybe you did, I missed it, but I am very particular about the naming conventions that I use.
Oh yeah, let's talk about that in a minute, because that's actually a big part of project workflow as well as archiving.
Absolutely. I don't think I'm a control freak, but it drives me crazy when I can't find a presentation because it's not following the naming convention.
Yeah, let's bring that up in a minute. That's great.
You got it. And so then, in addition to OneDrive, I also maintain cloud backup. I use Carbonite. And then the process I do is annually. I move past year into an during the current year, I have my current projects and then also last year's projects on the OneDrive. As the year passes, then I move everything into an external device that I can access from my computer. It's very easy. If I have to go back to those 2001 files, I can do it. But I don't move them off of my computer in OneDrive until the year is complete.
Wow. I think we all have processes in place.
That work.
In multiple locations. Yeah, it's good to think about because there are a few people I've run into and it's like, oh yeah, it's all right here. And they have it on, well, we can talk about that later, but I think they just carry all their files with them. I'm like, oh, really?
I'm sure I'm going to learn from you two today. That said, do you have a system for tracking, for example, project notes, requests, and other things that...
I don't always need notes beyond email correspondence, but if I do, I use Evernote for project notes.
Okay, I'm on the same path there. I use email notes. I use OneNote for my notes. I have a very organized notebook that's broken down by year, months. I enter all the days in advance, so all I have to do is, if a meeting comes up, I click on that day, and I can start typing the notes.
That's pretty great.
It is. Yeah. It's handy. And then it's easy. I know there's a send to email option, but I literally just copy and paste my OneNote into... Okay, I'll back up a little bit. All my projects are project work is scheduled on my calendar. So if I have any notes that relate to that project that's on my calendar, I will copy my OneNotes into that calendar.
That makes total sense. Well, from our ancient days, in print shop, when Lori and I were busy working in the print industry, we carried over kind of the idea of job jackets, which back then was literally a folder that had all the notes about a job, and it was handed off from one department to another so people could use this ancient utensil called a pen, and they can mark notes on it, and it was on paper, and it would go into the job jacket, which was just really a kind of fancy folder.
I remember those things.
Yeah, so when we moved, so we like that idea of being able to remember everything. So not only during the process did you have somebody, multiple people were working on it, there's a little bit of... information flow that should go with a project. So that was one thing that we liked. Another thing is that the job jackets were always available. So when somebody came back to print the job, if it was an annual conference, they came back to print it the following year, you could just look in the file drawer and pull out the old job jacket and you could see exactly how many they printed and what kind of costs there were and any special notes. And, it was kind of a neat idea. So we carried that over. We moved, we originally had Word documents for each one. We just threw it in the archives. It was kind of almost a diary of what was going on. Then we went to Excel files, kind of a little more robust as far as being organized. Now we have an online project management system, where every project is tracked and notes are added by every designer. It includes the design logs. We know how long everybody worked on what. But all those notes, the key is that they're all available for reference anytime in the future as part of our archives, which I think is a pretty cool and handy thing. So,
question for you. This is subject for another podcast. Your project management system, does it sync, the one you use, sync with Outlook? And here's why.
No.
I have to know how my projects impact my availability for meetings. So to me, they have to be synced. And I have not found a project management system that works as seamlessly as I'd like.
So I'm saying no, only because we don't use it, but I believe it does. Now, what we settled on is we're using Workflow Max, which was actually recommended by Emmett Bannister out of Australia Presentation Studio. That's what they were using. It's really more of a, I'll just say a European, well, they're actually based in New Zealand as far as the company goes, but it doesn't get a lot of exposure here in the States. And we found them to be the most robust for the price point of what we get out of it. It doesn't accomplish everything. And they have some sort of Outlook integration. I just don't think we utilize it. So I don't know the answer. I'm going to say no, we don't, but I'm not saying it's not available. But yeah, I haven't found one that calendars are a big deal.
Yes.
And I haven't found one that does calendaring really well. We're actually in the process right now of having some custom software coded. We're calling the project stack, which is really how does everybody's schedule stack up with what their project load is so we can predict who's available for incoming projects. And I haven't found one, so we're just having our own built. Hey, look, everybody's announcement came off that we're going to do a recording. I think I heard it on everybody's calendar.
Yep. And I turned it off.
Sorry about that.
So anyways, yeah, the idea of job jackets is what we've evolved from, and I think it works pretty well for us.
I kind of touched on this before, but let's revisit it. How do you feel about keeping files from past projects on your computer, especially a laptop or whatever that you travel with?
Yeah, I only travel with current projects that are in Dropbox. And in fact, my MacBook Air it has the smallest hard drive available because I keep it completely slim down. I don't want to bloat it with lots of files. So yeah, I mean, every once in a while it bites me because I don't have access to a project from a few years ago, but it's not that big a deal.
And yeah. So.
I assume your laptop's password access and all that good stuff.
Yeah. And the password is, 123, Troy. So it's very safe.
Password with an at symbol for the A. Yeah.
Well, and because I use OneDrive, I have access to, like I mentioned, I have access to all my current projects in the current year and the past year at my fingertips. If someone needs something older than that, they're going to have to wait.
I guess the advantage of that is you really don't even need your computer, because if you have you can web-based log into OneDrive and access files.
I can do it on my phone. I've done it.
Oh, really?
Awesome.
Wow. Yes. If client info is on a computer for us, that computer needs a password. We also don't keep client files in the documents folder or the docs folder, because those are just too accessible and visible in many situations. So we're advised for security, putting them in their own folder where things aren't found as easy. So all of our designers have current projects on their computers as part of their sync to our server. And then everything else is server-based access. So yeah, there's not a whole lot that we carry around with us as far as archived elements, but we have access to them through the secure VPN setup into the archive server. So as long as there's internet access, kind of like Sandy, we can get to anything almost. So going on that, do you have project files from, so you keep some files on your thing. What about a project file from like 3 years ago? How would you find it, or where would you get it? How far back do you go? Maybe that's the question.
I have everything back 15 plus years. So it's all in that same backup archive that it's on my hard drive. So it's all gettable very quickly.
Same here. It's all gettable.
How far back did you say you go, Sandy?
2001.
Okay. I know we go to 99. And we started with CD-ROM, and I actually think I should probably revise that to say probably 92, but that'd be more Lori when she was doing freelance or her own.
2000. I'm looking at my files now. I think
wow.
2000 is my
release. Oh. I'm impressed.
So here's a funny thing.
I'm older than you guys think.
I don't think so.
We started with CD-ROM. You know, we used to back them up to CDs. And, you know,
oh, yeah, I remember that.
You know, files weren't – yeah. And then we moved to DVDs, which was great. It's like, wow, we can get like 9 of these CDs on one DVD. And we still have those around, which is really funny because, you know, if I think about it, they all said they have about a 20-year shelf life, 25 years. So I think we're pretty much at the stage where we can start testing the media shelf life guarantees. Ooh. On some of those. We did move all the hard media over to the server-based archive. So even though we have the CDs and stuff, it's just because we put in so much, you know, labeling them and coming up with an indexing system. We used to have this software that actually indexed all the files on every fixed media. I'm trying to think of the name of it. It doesn't exist anymore, I'm sure. So it was really cool. We'd have an app on our computer and we could do a search. You know, I need to find the job for, you know, XYZ Corporation. And it would show us every disk number, because we had them all numbered, and it was really, really cool. We fortunately got to get rid of that whole methodology. Kind of forgot about that till now.
And how are you storing the files? What media? I mean, I mentioned Time Capsule. I've got these 4 gigabyte or gigabyte? No, terabyte.
I'm sure.
4 terabyte G drives. Those are what I like.
I think that's what I'm using, is external hard drives for backup. And so that's what I do. I couldn't tell you what the size is right now. Actually, when I was looking to prepare for this this podcast, I was trying to find them, and I know they're attached to my computer, but I honest to God couldn't find them. I don't know where they are.
Find the physical drive?
Yeah, exactly. So it was kind of funny. And as I mentioned then, I also use Carbonite, which I found is very helpful, but in researching for this session, there's this big warning on the Carbonite website that says, Carbonite's not made to back up Windows OS.
What?
Yeah. I mean, how many, I've had it for years, so now I have to investigate that and see what I'm missing out on, and I'll probably have to spend more money.
Oh, So what's the question? What media do we use?
Yeah, just talking about.
You know, I think I said just say hard drive backups. Mm-hmm. Everything's on our local server, which is a hard drive based, and there's like, you know, 20 hard drives in that or something, and then we have external hard drive backups. And there's actually two sets of those that we flop out every couple of weeks. And then there's a whole other set for like the deep archives that I only back up every couple of months. So everything's hard drive based at this point, but it gets a refresh all the time. So it's not like they're just sitting around catching dust. They're just never in the same, try not to keep them all in the same building at once.
So that makes me think of something. When you're working on a project and then archiving it, do you change the name of the project folder? I think you mentioned that you call it build or something.
I have a pretty simple sort of empty folder structure that whenever I start something new, it's got, you know, a couple empty folders like from client, from designer, billing, and Excel tracking sheet. But the general folder just gets, you know, the client and project name, and then it gets archived to just the client name when it's done.
I'm similar.
Not too complicated.
I don't change the file name ever, but now I'm thinking about it. I should be adding, I work with project numbers, so I should be adding the project numbers at least to the file folder. That said, I never mark anything as final. That only messes things up. I date everything.
There is no such thing as final.
Yeah, I will do that. I'll do that passive aggressively for a client when I send them.
Oh, yeah, to say, get it.
No, really, this is it. This is done.
Funny.
We'll do so again we have a again we just carried over so we have the client name, which is, it could be an acronym, so we have the client name, then we have the job number, which every project has a unique job number, and then we have a little descriptor, one to maybe three words describing it, and it might be as simple as PowerPoint formatting or template, because we know that that project is the template, or, you know, something video, or it may get more in depth, like I'm trying to think of something I could talk about that wouldn't give away, but it may say, you know, something about what meeting it is. So yeah, we do client, job number, and then descriptor for our project folders. And kind of like Nolan, we have a preset. We actually have a folder called Master Project Folders, and I'm going to look at it really quick. We have four preset folders. So every job starts with that. So if I go into PowerPoint, because that's the most applicable one, we have an art folder. We have an email folder. So we archive all the emails at the end. We have a from client. So all those files that the client gives you that you don't know what to do with a lot of times.
Right.
We have a miscellaneous, which is usually more about billing and things like that. Then we have the PowerPoint folder. We have a PPT template folder, because sometimes the client gives you a template, even if we're not developing a template. So we have a template. And then we have a reference folder. And the reference one's kind of unique in that it's, reference is instantly when we go to archive a project, we know the reference folder is going to be deleted. So you never put anything in there that you know you're going to keep. Reference is, hey, we worked on this. This is the presentation project we worked on last month for them. We'll throw it in there so we have some styling and some other ideas and we can see what they did. Or, hey, this is last year's presentation we did for the CEO, just so you have it so you can see, you know, because they may reference it as well. So we kind of, so anyways, that's our master project. And then everybody will customize the folders. And within art, there's a whole series. You know, we have AI and PSD, and then we have fonts, we have JPEG, PNG, EMF, then we have original source, which means everything we downloaded, you know, with the Adobe stock or Think stock numbers or Getty, and then video and art. So yeah, they're pretty robust folders, but it's really nice. They're all just there. You just copy one, you duplicate it, and you change the name, and you're off and running.
I like it. See, I said I'd be learning something from you guys today. Well, I do too have a very specific, as I mentioned earlier, business rules for naming files. And so these aren't, we're talking about organizing files inside a folder, correct?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I name them, they're always project name, space, dash, space, and then the date in two digits. So two spaces for the day, month, and year.
Now, is the date when the project finished, started, or?
No, that's for every single version. So,
So
if I work on a version the next day, then of course the file name changes by one day. If I send more than one file in a single day, I add parentheses with an A, B, or C
Oh.
In it. So you that way.
A, B, B, C, C, if you get that far down the.
God forbid.
When you run out of alphabet.
Yeah, exactly. I thank goodness I haven't had to do that. But that really allows me then to know what I can potentially delete when I'm organizing the file to close it. It also helps me with billing to, if I ever need to justify why I might have gone over budget. Well, geez, it included 2 rounds of revisions. And look at this, we have 16, 8 of which I sent you on one day. That
is brilliant. I mean, that's a very key thing, because Nolan, do you do this where projects, you know, you include number of revisions estimated in the project or included in the project?
Yeah.
Okay. You just kind of go for it.
I do.
It's to provide some scope, right?
Just that gives you, yeah, Sandy, and that gives you proof of, hey, I actually did 16 revisions instead of the 4 we specified.
Exactly.
But you got to sometimes take note. Sometimes they're internal revisions here. Like the designer will do it, and then I'll make recommendations, kind of playing art director, so it'll go back and become another revision number. But I don't want to bill the client as that being a revision, because that's an internal one.
Right. So you're right.
We actually have a methodology for that.
That's cool.
Okay, I'll just describe it. So what we do is whole numbers go to the client, decimal numbers go out. So if it's version 1, that went to the client. If it's version 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, those are internal builds.
Very good.
Client will get version 2. So we kind of hope to never need to go more than 9 revisions to the client in between revisions. But that's how that actually has just evolved in the past few years. And that's kind of more of a team thing where, you know, it could even be the point where, you know, one designer is working on a set of slides in a presentation, another designer is working on another one, and we had names and initials and dates. And so we just went to this version number. It'd be like,
I like
Sarah's
that.
Doing version 1.2 and Mike has version 1.3, and we're going to merge them together to make version 1.4 as a whole document. So we kind of,
that's cool.
Sandy, I was going to ask you this one, because you mentioned this, it tells you which ones to delete. Do you have a methodology? Because sometimes, you know, when you do a presentation and you've got 60 slides and all of a sudden they just chop it out. Okay, we've only got 10 minutes for this talk, so we're going to take out these 22 slides. You know, and I never want to delete them, but, you know, to permanently, because that was a lot of work, and you know it may come back or they may ask for it. So do you have some way of knowing?
No, I can't really track it back. I mean, if they came back to me 8 years later, I would have a really hard time looking through those.
When you archive, because you did all, like, say you had today's date and you had version 1, 2, and 3, you know, in the parens, would you keep all 3 of those in your archives?
The truth is I do. I like to say that I would take those versions out, but no, I for the most part, I keep all of it.
Wow.
Nolan, do you
keep all your versions? I'm just curious now.
It depends. Sometimes I do.
You're such the lawyer. It depends is it his depends. Favorite answer.
No, I mean, it actually depends on the project, because once I archive it, I'll see if I actually really need those previous versions. Because a lot of times I'll get rid of them if they're just
try.
Sort of.
I try to do that. I really do. But then run out of time and I say, oh.
Okay. So here's an idea. We've done this. We've been doing this for, several years now. And it's really, really cool. So if we know there's some major work in a version and we're going on to the new version that's missing it, we'll add we'll add an underscore and save in all caps. So the very last part of the project, the file name is save. So when we go to delete it, we delete everything in the old, everything gets put into an old folder as well. So only the active version, the current version is available and everything else kind of in a subfolder. But we'll go through that old folder and we'll delete everything but the ones that say save on them, because we know there was something about it. This way, even our project manager, our project coordinator who's, you know, cleaning up files, they don't have to actually know the project. They can just go, oh, these are the important ones not to delete, but I'm going to delete the other, you know, 700 gigs of files that we don't need. So that's something we do.
I like it.
Okay. So here's another one, kind of speaking of that whole thing. We did an episode on images a little while ago, and this is kind of related to that. How would you tell a client that came back to you what the source for one of the royalty-free images was? You know, they say, hey, we want to reuse this image. And but they need it. You modified it in PowerPoint for this use. And now they need a larger version because it's going to be used in a print piece maybe. I don't know. I'm making this up as I go. But how would you actually know what the source for that image was based on your archives? Or can you tell?
Yeah, no, I get that question every once in a while. I generally set up client name light boxes for images. So I can go back into Shutterstock and find it. Sometimes I don't get lazy. I mean, here's one thing. If you haven't done anything to the image after you've downloaded it, you can always unzip a PowerPoint file, locate the image, and that should still have the Shutterstock or iStock name on it. If that doesn't work, you can just take the image and upload it to a reverse image search. My favorite is TinEye, and that will usually tell you where you can get it. Usually you can get it on a number of different sites. So those
that's a brilliant idea. I've actually not done that. Yeah. That's a great idea.
You know, in terms of all the sort of stuff, mostly images that I'm importing, I used to in every job folder have an import folder. That's where I'd put all the, you know, the saved out PNGs and things that have been prepared for import. And then I just realized I had like all this, you really have multiple, it's in the PowerPoint, but it's also in the folder. It's all these like things that you're not using anymore. And so it was just taking up space. So now I don't do that. I have a single import folder in Dropbox. It's the top folder in my file sidebar. So anytime I save an image out or anything for presentation or import, it goes in there. It's easy to get to. It just dumps in there. And then I import it from there. And I go through and I keep that. I go through it every couple of months and delete the old stuff. So, you know, a month or two later, if I'm looking for that same image, you know, fresh, it's in there. But, you know, after a few months, it's gone. And it just saves space. It's just sort of a clearinghouse for importing.
And that's why our archives are so big. We keep all that stuff.
Yeah.
I just found like I was never going back to it, never needing it, never using it. So
And most,
it was just like filled with junk too. You know, you save out 8 different versions of a photo to try to get it right, and you know, you don't need all those.
Right. Well, it works too if your client doesn't use their notes. It works to put the original source name into the notes.
In the PowerPoint file?
Okay. In the PowerPoint file, exactly. So I'll do that.
So much work.
We do that for a few. We have a few clients where we do that because they need to show that it's royalty-free down the road. And we'll just say, you know, we literally just copy-paste, you know, Adobe Stock, blah, 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 or, you know, Think Stock, whatever
I've
was.
I've done that a few times.
We actually don't label. We just put a list of them in there. We actually don't label. If there's 4 images on the page, we actually just put the 4 references. We don't tell them which image is which. They can figure it out if they need to. You know, they can plug in the number into Google and say, where's this image?
Well,
yeah, we do that.
Okay. And I also then, I save the original stock photo file name, and then I will add a search word to the file name that is relevant to the photo. So if someone says, you know, the person doing the backflip, I'll add backflip in there or something.
That's
so
lot of work.
No, it's not, because it's as I'm downloading it, I just add that file name.
Okay.
But
yeah, I totally get it. I just think that's a lot of extra work.
Here's where
I'm admirable of it. It's you know, that's good.
But it doesn't. Here's why it doesn't work. I think Windows Explorer sucks.
Oh, I'm totally with you.
Oh my gosh, I'll put in the search word and it'll be the exact word in the file name and it won't show up. I don't understand. I haven't gone so far as to tag. You know, you can put tags in when you're saving the file, so maybe that's what it's searching for. But it's awful.
I just did in January, I finished a series, and things kind of got waylaid here with the blog, with all this work. But I did I was doing a whole thing on SVG, because I'm very excited about SVG workflow, the vector format. But I had this whole post that basically says Windows is kind of horrible because, you know, there's no default app that'll open an SVG and let you preview it. There's no Windows Explorer. I actually did a screen capture. Really, it's a good one to go look at, because it shows a screen capture of what you see for a ping, an EPS, an SVG, you know, all these different file formats. And a lot of them are just a generic icon. Like, we don't know what to do with it. So I agree. Windows needs some definite updating in that realm. I am not nearly – no, we keep them all, Nolan, but we don't go to the naming structure that Sandy does. So I'm studious enough to keep them, but not the A student enough to actually name them. We keep them in our art folder. There's a source folder. So everything we download that's used for the project is put in there by the native original name. I figure we can just look at it, you know, if we need to find it.
That's good.
So we do keep them all, but I don't add to the naming, which could be really helpful. But we do them also per project. We don't have like one big drop.
No, I do it by project
bucket,
too.
Like Nolan's got. So we do it by project. So we keep them. Okay, well, I think we're starting a trend here, just to kind of wrap up this episode, because we received this email from a presentation listener, Thomas, with an H. that can easily be a part of this topic. So let's wrap up our conversation on project archiving with this question. And let me just kind of summarize the email to this. It says, thanks for the great podcast. You three are awesome to listen to as I work on presentation. As I work on presentations every day, I'm trying to figure out what a good file size for my presentations are. Is there a formula or guidelines for if a 20 slide, excuse me, let me rephrase that. If I have a 20 slide presentation, should it be 3 megabytes or 50 megabytes? Thanks, Thomas. So, I mean, he's asking about an active project, but this is, mm-hmm. you know, when you archive things, you gotta, you know, you don't want to be archiving gigs and gigs of extra data. So it's a good question.
It is a good question. I actually just wrote an article that for presentationexpert.com on compression, specifically with images, how you sort of get your files down to size.
I'll have to read that.
Yeah, I don't see it up now, but I'll hopefully by the time this goes live, there'll be a link for it. And actually, I'm also doing a webinar for them by the time this goes live on imagery as well. So
if you can send me a link. I'd love to add that because I want to
send. I'll send those. But yeah, so in terms of sort of from my perspective, there's no right answer. So I'm not going to use that word, Troy, but that you love.
Depends. I was going to use it.
Yeah. You know, the thing is there's no real formula. It's just sort of a feel. Like if you've got a 20 slide presentation and it's 50 megs and there are only, you know, a half dozen images and it's not for print, something's wrong.
Yeah. I agree. It's not going to be the number of slides. It's the content on the slides. Because two slide presentation, but if one of them is a video, that presentation may be 300 megabytes because you have a title slide and you have a video that's 290 megs.
And then we've done 50 slide presentations that are all vector with icons and no imagery whatsoever. And I've seen those like a megabyte.
Exactly.
So content is more important.
It depends.
Do you have a favorite tool, Nolan, speaking of compression for optimizing?
This before, but NX PowerLite is the one we all love. And this is actually, I talk about this in the article on Presentation Expert. PowerPoint's compression tools are okay, but as one friend of mine said, it's more of a hatchet, where NX PowerLite's more of a scalpel. So I think PowerPoint's internal compression it's okay, but it's not great, meaning your images are going to get a little pixelated and rough around the edges. I don't love it. And I also don't think that the pure compression is as good just in terms of
size. So here's there are things then. Once you realize something might be wrong, go back and check your images. Did you, for example, take a copy a section of a PDF and paste it into your PowerPoint for an image? That's going to create, you know what I'm talking about? Rather than inserting a PNG or
it's when you're working with internal marketing departments and you get here's the image and you know it's a print resolution.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
CMYK image that's 50 megs for that one image when really it should be about 3 megs tops.
Right. And your PowerPoint compression tool will not work for that.
Correct. It has some limitations.
Right. So you have to cut it and repaste it as a PNG and then check your file size and see if that's done anything to it and then use your compression tools as you need.
Yeah. There are a couple of things, like if you're just sort of gotchas to look out for, even though you might only have a few slides, make sure you look at the template itself because sometimes there are huge images and lots of content on the template on layouts that you may or may not need. You might have like a random stray template in there with images that you can get rid of.
Good one.
Look at PDFs are a good thing. Yeah, if you take in a whole PDF and it only shows the first page, but there are 50 other pages in there, that's not going to help. And a lot, you can always unzip a PowerPoint file, change it to zip, unzip, and take a look at, every once in a while you'll find like, somebody put a 20 meg TIFF in here. Like when did that happen?
Oh yeah.
Right.
Oh, I have one. I got a new one. This came up two weeks ago when I was in Orlando. We had a 53 megabyte ping image. I didn't know you could make a ping image that big. I was blown away. We pulled that down to about 3 to 4 megabytes, which was still a full size image. And yeah, that was a big one.
And if you really want to drive somebody crazy, you put in one of those images and then you go into selection pane and hide it and they'll never find it.
Okay, wait. But to wrap this up, Thomas, here's probably the best advice. There is no formula to it. I think a 3-slide presentation that's 30 megabytes might be a problem. But then again, you could have a 50-slide presentation like Noel was talking about, and it's only 1 to 2 megabytes. It's because of the content in it. But what is – so Sandy, Nolan, and I'll chime in with mine. What is your method outside running NX PowerLite? What is your method of looking inside of a file? Because a PPTX, the X stands for XML, and it means it's just a container. We can look inside there and actually pull out all the images, videos, coding if you wanted. But what's your way of looking in there to find if there's an image that's out of control size?
I think I just mentioned that. You change
Give PPTX. It a little more clearly, a little more step.
You change PPTX, you change the extension to .zip, which turns it into a zip file. Then you on the Mac, you just double-click it. On the PC, you uncompress it. Right.
Double-click uncompresses it automatically.
It does. I thought it didn't used to. I thought it just opened it. Anyway, so you either double-click or right-click, uncompress, whatever, and that will give you a bunch of folders, and you're looking for the one called Media, and inside Media should be all your images and video.
Sandy, what do?
I do exactly that. Yes, exactly.
Do either one of you have 7-zip as an app installed? I don't know if it's Mac.
I used to have it a million years ago.
Oh my gosh, you absolutely want it. I believe it's Mac-based as well, Nolan. I'd have to look it up. 7-zip, free little utility. You go to any PowerPoint file, you right-click on it, and you say open archive. Not unarchive, but open archive, and it dynamically opens a zip file. You don't have to change the file name.
Cool.
You can look in there. And I do it all the time. It's so much faster than changing it to .zip and getting that nasty message about, are you sure you want to do this? Because you could ruin the world by doing this. 7-zip is the cool. It basically does all that in one step.
Yeah, okay. Definitely save a copy before you do that unzip thing.
Absolutely.
And then I just sort by file size, and you find like 53 megabyte ping images in your file. And you go, oh, this could be part of the problem. And then I pull it out. I optimize it in whatever application I'm going to use, and then I drop it back in there and go find that slide to make sure it's actually viewing the way I expected. Okay, we're going to wrap up our discussion about project archiving and some of our best practices. If you're an independent designer or small studio, I recommend you put together a project archive statement so clients do not assume what you are providing, especially after a project, because that's when things generally come up that aren't agreed upon earlier. I also highly recommend everyone have a standard folder and file structure like we talked about to use on every project, because that makes your life it makes it much easier down the road when things come up. And a last recommendation is a file backup system of some sort. And as you heard, all three of us have very different scenarios, but we all make sure we do have backups that are not just on one computer. The business benefits of having these in place will have a huge impact on being perceived as a professional. Okay, let's do a quick round of presentation pro ideas and tech tips. Anybody have anything? I'll save mine for last.
Okay, before the end of the year, we were talking about what I hope to do for this next year. And one of those things was I'd been searching for a smartwatch for 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
I finally landed on the Galaxy Gear 2, and mostly because, I did buy the Pebble. It didn't work. So I ended up buying it didn't work. I'm going to back it up a little bit. I liked how it looked. It was small enough for my wrist. It didn't look like a TV on my wrist. It was round. It had some style, but it just didn't have the capabilities that I wanted. Because I use an Android phone, because I use a Galaxy phone, I ended up buying the Galaxy Gear 2 S2. Absolutely love it. It's stylish for anyone out there who cares. And
what color is it? Pink, teal?
It's rose gold. White.
Rose gold. Okay.
It's a white leather band. Of course, you can change out the bands. Here's what's really cool. One of my clients / friends is an artist. He is creating art for Ralph Lauren and Ralph Lauren Polo and Volvo for the Polo Classic that takes place every summer. I'm going to take his art, and I'm going to be able to customize a watch face using that art. And I'm so thrilled about it. I think it's so the geek in me is coming out. I have the stylish watch, and I get to be geeky by programming. Aww. The watch face.
Oh, I just brought it up. This is nice.
Isn't it?
This is very chic.
Thank you. How about Nolan?
I've got a desktop thing for the Mac. On the Mac, and I don't think you can do this on the PC, but you'll correct me if I'm wrong. In the Mac OS preferences, under keyboard, you have shortcuts. And what you can do here is you can set keyboard shortcuts system-wide for the OS, but you can also set them for individual applications. And that's what I do for PowerPoint and also some other applications. For example, my save as across all applications is F5. So whether I'm in Illustrator or PowerPoint or whatever, all F5 I know is going to bring up that save as. In PowerPoint, the one that I love the most is I've set right align and left align to be shift command, right arrow or left arrow or up arrow or down arrow.
Wow.
And because those alignment tools don't have key commands that I'm aware of. So I'm now doing this on the Mac system level. And basically you can choose in any application, you can choose any file function. All you do is you type it in, in your shortcuts on the Mac OS in this place, and you assign it a key command, and it works like magic. So if you're unhappy with the default key commands for any program, you can override those on the Mac.
I did not know. That's awesome.
How about you, Troy? Do you have any tips?
I'm going to do a presentation pro tip, and I'm going to reemphasize one that was kind of mentioned earlier, but I'll make sure it's clear, is version numbers for files is just critical. Mm-hmm. It avoids, and in our case, I'm going to go one step further and define when we give a version number, and it's anytime a file leaves the design computer. So if I'm working on a file, and I do some edits, and I close it, and I get a few more requests, and I open it back up, I can keep working on that same version number. Maybe it's version 1.2 because it's an internal versioning. But as soon as I send it to a client, or as soon as I put it on our server and somebody else could access it, and or maybe I download it and I make one letter change, it gets a new version number. No matter what, there is always a version to go with every change. Therefore, there's no, I thought that was in there. Scenario. Mm-hmm. We also do the keep for all old versions. So that's just so that we know which ones to keep when we're archiving, for any reason. It could be any reason. Maybe the template changed and you want to keep the old template styling in case they go back to it. We can do it. So it's just a little bit of a tip about workflow and keeping things straight and organized and never having a version control conflict. So there's my tip.
Very nice.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a graphic design studio team focused on presentation design. Check us out online at tlccreative.com, on Facebook at Facebook, the backslash, the forward slash, right? Mm-hmm. So facebook.com/TLC Creative Services, and my presentation blog, thepresentationblog.com.
This is Nolan from Nolan Haynes Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. It is up. Subscribe for lots of free downloads and goodies. And if you're interested in training in data visualization or presentation for your organization, give me a holler.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website at presentationwiz.biz, my blog at pptwizblog, and the Presentation Guild website at presentationguild.org. Or just search for Sandra Johnson PowerPoint in your web browser and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.